Hello and welcome back to another Let's Backflip Happy Hour. I'm Ryan Frayn, co-creative director here at Backflip and Lord of the Podcast. Thanks so much for joining in for this episode. This is episode 70 with Lynn Frazier. And for a second there, I was trying to recall the name because I couldn't remember off the top of my head. And I read her bio. She's got such great work experience, 11 years working in television production at the national, international level, NBC, ABC, BBC, Channel 4, Bloomberg, Today Show, Late Night with Jimmy Fallon, Windy City Live, Midwestern Regional Emmy, you know, just such great cred. But it's funny because like I don't remember much of that because she is a business partner with Ryan Dombrowski, who we've had on the show before. And she is just a baller producer and visual storyteller in the Milwaukee area. And I remember, you know, just kind of going more into the content that she does now, how she got into it, all that stuff. So that's why reading the bio, I was like, wait, who did I talk to? But just a great personality, a great producer and creative from the Milwaukee area, and kind of a follow-up to the Ryan Dombrowski episode earlier. Let's see, I don't think I have it on the list, maybe 10 episodes ago. So you go ahead and check that out. Luke, maybe we can get a link in the show notes so people can go check that out. As they are business partners, they do a lot of awesome work together. It's fun to see all that stuff come together. So this is episode 70 with Lynn Frazier. If you don't already, please do like, subscribe, follow, do all the things. Leave a review if you'd be so kind. That's always very helpful for us and for the algorithm so people can discover us. And that's what we got. Thank you. I appreciate you. I appreciate your time. Thanks for hanging with us. This is episode 70 with Lynn Frazier. Hello and welcome back to another Backflip Happy Hour. And if you're listening on the podcast to the Let's Backflip Show Happy Hour edition, we're excited to be back here. We've been traveling and there's been so much going on this summer that it's nice to be back. I think we're back to a couple weeks in a row here. It's going to be glorious. I'm Ryan Frayn, co-creative director here at Backflip. Joining me as always, we've got John over here. Say hey, John.
Hey, John.
You were telling me before too with your current setup that, you know, because it looks so cool with the guitars and various string instruments, that until recently, basically that frame was clear and everything else around it was just nuts.
Yeah, it, you know, usually it's the magic of TV or the magic of video. Like outside this frame is usually like complete insanity. But a couple weekends ago, we had an opportunity to straighten up some things on here. So the shelves are actually like usable over here. And there's mostly clear couches and the piano looks very nice and minimalistic now.
I wish we would have had some pictures of that we could have shown because I can imagine what that's like too. Because in here as well, my office, when I receive stuff, I'll open it up. And then when it's happy hour, I'm like, okay, shove this over here, hide this down here. It probably looks ridiculous when somebody walks in.
Yeah. So usually all right. I weave my way over to this like one chair right here. But.
Hoarding. All right. So before we bring our guest on, we're going to mention the drinks that we have real quick. I've got a little Carbon 4 cucumber melon. I was looking for the Fantasy Factory variety pack, but we've drank through it because I got this put up. Luke got this put up for me. If I light it, you can't see it. It's a really great nice. Fantasy Factory art. But we drank through the variety pack. So I'm limited to cucumber melon seltzer here, but I'm super excited with that. And we got a new Nespresso machine. So I'll be sipping like this, I guess, on this little espresso.
This one, you got to get one out.
There it is. Oh, that is straight espresso right to my vein. What do you got?
I had to think fast. Yeah. So I still have coffee from this morning, some water. And then I was like, well, I guess I should join them with something. But I'm like out of everything. Well, okay. I have stuff. So what I have is I have the Bambara.
I like the story. There's like a half an hour story before we get to what you're drinking.
I have a yellow drink. It's the is it Bambara or Yabara or whatever?
Yeah, that sounds good to me.
coconut rum from Turks and Caicos because I saw in the fridge that somebody bought pineapple juice. So some pineapple juice and then just some random seltzer that hopefully doesn't add too much other flavor, but adds the consistency that I want. So that's what that is. It doesn't feel like a coconut rum day outside. But
no, that's all right.
You got to work with what you have.
You know, one time we were driving in the car and we were talking about loving your enemies. And my son at the time, who was 7, said, like pineapple? And we're like, what? Yeah. And he's like, well, I don't like pineapple. So pineapple's my enemy. Am I supposed to love pineapple? I was like, oh my gosh, you're so wonderful. All right.
Yes.
That's enough preamble. We've got people who want us to get to the meat. So let's go ahead and bring Lynn in. What's up, Lynn? Thanks so much for joining us.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
So before we get started, go ahead.
I was just going to say, are you guys picking up any construction noise from me?
When you talk, there's a little, like a little hum, but beyond that, no. Yeah, like when you don't talk, nothing.
Yeah. That's like a drill and saw in the background, but I'm glad it's not too much.
Nice. That's technological.
Let me know if it gets to be too much.
Yeah, perfect. That sounds good. So we shared what we have to drink. What did you bring to this happy hour?
So I was listening to you guys talk about your drinks, and I looked at the beer that I grabbed out of my fridge, and I was, oh, I'm being such a bad Wisconsinite because it's called Czech Swing, and it's a Czech Pilsner. And I'm like, I'm from Wisconsin. I should be drinking a Wisconsin beer. And then I was like looking closer at it. It is a Wisconsin beer. It's brewed and canned at the Broken Bat Brewing Company right here in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
It's just a Czech style Pilsner.
Sure. Yeah. Well, and I feel like with beer too, like, you know, we can be snobs, but it's like good Wisconsin beer is a foundation. But then, you know, there's no judgment. You could have brought an actual Czech beer and it would have been awesome.
I just grabbed whatever was in the fridge. We're clearly not like prepped for the Labor Day weekend just yet. We'll have to rectify that. But happy Labor Day weekend to you both.
Yes. And you.
Yeah. Yeah. Likewise. And John was just saying he was not ready for the weekend.
I'm panicking. I have construction to do tomorrow. I'm doing my own construction in my house. Is this a family member of yours doing it, or is this?
Oh, no. Oh, no. We've got a whole team of people. We have an old house. We have like an 1890 house, and we were fixing a ceiling leak, and it's like a sweater. When you start pulling the thread, you're like, oh, we're just going to get rid of this thread, and then the whole sweater starts unraveling. Mm-hmm. That's basically our home. We were going to patch a leak, and then now we're like tearing down walls in the back of the house. So, yeah.
That's
awesome. Home ownership.
my house is not that age, but it's older. And it's, yeah, every time you're like, oh, I just got to fix this one little thing. I got to open up the hole, reinstall this outlet here. And then you get it open and it's like, oh, I did not expect that to be in there.
That's the motto of this entire project. Oh, I didn't see that coming. Yeah. And then mm-hmm. it just gets more and more and more expensive.
You also realize how terrible of work people have done. Like our home's not even that old. It was 91. But what was I doing? Replacing a microwave. And behind it, there was an open hole that had wires coming up and wires joining and then being connected with, you know, one of those little caps, which first off, that's super janky, even if like I'm doing something and, you know, I'm not a professional and I do janky stuff like that. But also that's super not up to code, you know, like if you're redoing stuff electrical in your kitchen, you're supposed to rerun it. And I would say if you're doing it and you want to do it without, my headphones just got crazy. Without doing it up to code, just put a box, you know, make it safe so that it's not going to start a fire, right?
Yeah. I just am like, stop telling me things to the project manager. I'm like, just cover it up. Just cover it up with plywood. I can't take anymore.
Hide it so I can't see it.
Hide it, and we're gonna sell this baby, and it's gonna be somebody else's problem.
Yeah. Hopefully there's no inspectors watching right now.
Cut this part out. Oh, we're live. That's not good.
In a childhood home, and then I actually experienced a similar thing here. Got a wall open one time, and there was like, okay, the childhood home, we open up a wall, and in between the studs, you know, about several feet, like 2 feet high, there were remains of like mice. So like the bottom layer was like mostly dust and skeletons. And then as you went up, it's like an archaeological building. You get toward the top and there's more whole bodies. And they must have just been able to get, you know, and then fall down into that cavity and then never get out.
They just kept going to find Bob. Like, hey, what happened to Bob? And they're like, somebody go look for him. And then that search party never came back. And they just did it for years and years and years. And they're still trying to find
him. They're still doing it. And then in this house, this wall to my right, actually, when I redid this one, we got it open, and in a cavity, there was like 2 feet, 3 feet of like acorns. Like it was like some stash for some animal that was like, I'm saving up. This is where it's going to be. It's gone now.
That's a squirrel tactic, I think. Yeah. I'm pretty sure that they dash, but then they don't have any recollection. And then as then as a community, they all just find each other's stash and like live off of that. So nobody's found that one yet.
Which is also how I operate. Not with acorns and nuts, but like Ryan's still struggling over
it. I know. I was like, I love that I had a malfunction, and I come back and we're talking about the stashes of chipmunks and squirrels. This is the way I like these to go. That's awesome. You know, and this is, like I mentioned earlier, kind of how we go. We just flow. But I am curious. I don't know a lot about you, you know. I knew Ryan when we were in school, and just looking up a little bit more information about you. Looks like you were there as well. You went to the University of Wisconsin-Madison.
I was.
In the Comm Arts program. So let's hear your story. What's your your origin story?
So Ryan Nebrowski, who you guys had on a few weeks ago, he's my partner right now in our business. He and I know him from going to UW. We were the year, and we had a mutual friend, and now he and I are friends and business partners, which is good. But the thing that I keep finding as I'm talking to him is like, dude was really well connected in school and like knew everybody. And so he'll like always throw out all these names. And I was like, oh, I thought I was like a social friendly person, but apparently I didn't know anyone. Either that or I, unlike squirrels, or no, like squirrels, don't recollect anything very well. But anyway, so yes, I was a Comm Arts student at UW. Madison, and I graduated in 05. And then it was really tricky being a Comm Arts student when most of your friends were business majors. I don't know if you guys experienced this, but like post Christmas break and you're coming back into your final semester, all my business school friends were like, oh, check out my signing bonus to go work for, you know, whatever company. And they're like totally set, right? Like, they're going to live their life and make a lot of money. And I was like, what am I doing with my life? And then, so I was like graduating and trying to figure out what to do. And I like landed this internship to teach English in Japan. And I was like, so relieved because I had something to say, because everyone's like, what are you going to do after graduation? And I was like, I'm going to Japan. So that was good. But then when I got back from Japan, I had like zero prospects at all. I was living in my parents' house again, which really hard to do after being independent in college. I like had gotten placed at like a labor union, like pushing paperwork. I was like, this is the worst. And from a prior internship with the local Madison NBC station, I did a stint there in news as an intern. I got a connection to NBC in New York. And so I had applied for their page program. And so the NBC Page program is like a, they call it like an early career development thing. You're a glorified tour guide for the studios is what you are. Like you are they call you a public relations liaison, which is funny because you're just a tour guide. But so you give tours of the studios in New York at Rockefeller Center. And then when you're not giving tours, you can do these job assignments in different departments and like learn more about the network and about production and TV and the whole gamut. So I threw my hat in the ring in this Page program application, and with just one contact there who was able to say, hey, pull this girl's resume, you should look at her. But I've recently heard that the Page program is more difficult to get into than Harvard, which I was like, wow, that's really impressive. So I don't know how, aside from this guy saying, pull this girl's resume, how like I even landed the interview. But like, I remember when they called me because I was driving home from this labor union job, which was just the worst. I was on the I-94 heading to Kenosha, and like they call and they're like, hey, we want to interview you. This is the NBC Page program. And like before I could even get off the phone, I was like sobbing. I was like, oh my God. I was like, this is the best news. Anyway, that's a long lead in to me getting a job as a Page at NBC, which I did in the year after graduating. And so that was amazing. I moved to Manhattan. I lived.
That's Kenneth from 30 Rock, right?
Yes, Kenneth. Kenneth was a Page. And it was funny because when I was a Page, 30 Rock was starting. Tina Fey was starting that show. And like everybody in the Page program was like, oh my God, did you hear that there's a character who's a Page? And like we were all really excited about that.
Representation.
Right. He wore the same horrible blazer uniform that we were all wearing.
That's
at the
awesome.
Time. But so that year was fab. Like I gave tours, but I also landed some really interesting assignments. I was assigned to Bob Wright's office. He's the chairman and CEO of NBC. So I was working in his office every day. So I went from being at like the bottom of the barrel at NBC to like going up to the executive suite. Like I can remember like sitting at this like workstation looking out the window at like the Empire State Building in the executive suite, and like I'm like, I'm just this girl from Kenosha, Wisconsin, and look at me now. But like really, so I was very Kenneth the Page in terms of my outlook and way of behaving. But so yeah, it was great. Page program was awesome. Out of that I got a job in their advertising and promotion department. I did that for a couple years, and right about that time was when Jay Leno was leaving the Tonight Show for the first time, and Conan O'Brien was supposed to be taking over the Tonight Show. So there was a late night opening, and there was a lot of speculation about who was going to handle late night at 30 Rock in New York.
Oh, yeah.
And it was Jimmy Fallon. And so when we knew that, or when I found that out, I had said to my then boss, I'm like, I would chew my arm off to work on late night. Like, is there any way I can get in there? And he's like, I know the executive producer. Let me see. So I went and met the executive producer, Mike Shoemaker, who's still the EP of late night, Late Night with Seth. But it's funny because Seth always talks about Mikey the Shoe. I don't know if you watch the show, but Mikey the Shoe is a real person and he's the EP of the show. And so I got the opportunity to meet him, and he's a delight and a wonderful man, and was like, yeah, we'll give you a shot. Come and be the assistant to the segment producers. So I started on that show, and it was like 30 people. Like I was like one of the first people in there. Like they were just hiring writers, like starting to hire writers. And I was one of the little assistants running around, and I did that for 2 years and like launched the show, and it got bigger and better. And now it's the Tonight Show. And so like, I still know people, gosh, what is this, over 10 years ago, right? That are at that show. And it's just really cool to see. And it was like really amazing to be a part of that, the birth of that like show, and to like watch the set get created and the writers getting hired, and just meeting and knowing Jimmy, meeting and knowing the Roots was like dumb. The pinnacle of my career, for sure. And so after that, I was so broke in New York. Like, I was losing money living there. It's really hard. It's like Manhattan. And I was just tired of the streets that smelled like hot garbage in the summer. Mm. And I knew I was never going to live in New York forever. I'm glad I did it for the time that I did in my formative 20s. I learned a lot about myself. But then I was like, I want to get back to the Midwest. I'm just a Midwesterner through and through. And that was at the time that Oprah was leaving Chicago. So the local ABC station in Chicago was like, we're going to launch a new talk show in the wake of Oprah leaving, because Oprah started at that same station. It's WLS ABC 7 in Chicago. She started there with her talk show, got syndicated, blew up into the behemoth that was the Oprah show. Mm-hmm. So the same station was like, we're going to do it again, and started with this show called Windy City Live. Spoiler alert, they didn't become Oprah. I did that show for 2 years. It was it's just finishing. They did it for, it was happened for 10 years. They're just now stopping that show. But it was like a live daily chat show, Chicago centric.
Was there a personality for it, or did they, were, you know?
Yeah, there were two, hosts? Val Warner and Ryan Chivarini. But they were local news talent to Chicago, and they're great and fabulous. It just never, I don't know, it just never got traction. It never, there was talk of it getting syndicated a little bit. It didn't, but it was fine. And good. Like, doing live TV is a whole different animal, which I didn't love. Like, I loved the aspect of what we were doing on late night. Like, you had the control of editing it, right? And you had the control of like making it what you wanted and like fine tuning it for the comedy to be like perfect. Whereas in live TV, I would work on these segments and you just kind of like throw it to the host and you're like, please get it right.
Hope they for never, the best. Yeah.
They never get it right. And then it's over and you're like, well, that didn't go the way I hoped it would. But I mean, I guess that's kind of the positive side of it too, is when it's over, it's over. You can't change anything. Yeah. A little like this, a little like what we're doing right now, right?
That's why we do this the way we do it, because it's over, and what happens, happens.
Yikes. But then after that, I moved to Scotland. I met a Scottish guy in New York, and then I fell in love with him. And then I moved to Scotland, and I married him, and so I lived in Scotland for 3 years doing TV over there. I was just a freelance TV producer and worked on some stuff for the BBC. It's funny, I'm talking about my husband like he's a past tense. I'm still very much married to him.
Yeah, I was kind of curious where it was going to go with that.
Oh, no, we're married. We have kids. We bought this house. Nice. But so for 3 years, worked on some stuff for the BBC and like stations over there. They call a lot of the program is called factual entertainment. It would probably be what we would refer to as reality TV, but it's different. It's treated differently. Like they abide by a guideline of like truth and storytelling, where we in reality TV here clearly don't. Like, we script our reality TV and we manufacture outcomes, where they're like, nope, it was like very docu-style, and like we have to capture this as it happens. Maybe it goes the way we want, maybe it doesn't, but we're telling the truth. So like that was like a pain in the butt, because a lot of times things didn't go the way that you'd hope they would for entertainment value. But I don't know, I respected that. And it was like an introduction to the BBC's way of doing stuff and the guidelines that they abide by. And I'm like, well, no wonder everybody loves the BBC, because they're not bullshit. They're like actually telling the truth, which was delightful and different than America.
Yeah, they're not like, now walk through the door again, and this time you're mad. Just so we have two versions.
Right. Like, there was a time where I tried on our shoot to do something like that. Like, I was like, we missed this moment. I'm like, we need this for the story. And they're like, you missed it. And I was like, no.
Oh,
but
damn.
It was interesting. It was good and cool. And I did home makeover shows. The most rewarding job that I did was for Bloomberg, actually, and it was called Good Fortunes. And we went and did a docuseries about the world's richest philanthropists. And so they sent me to Mexico, they sent me to India, to meet these people and like document what they were doing with their money for good. And it was just this like amazing, heartwarming project to be a part of. The scary part of it, though, was because I was going to Mexico City and because I was going to Delhi, I had to go through hostile environment training. Mm. So they bring in this army guy to, like, teach me what to do if I was kidnapped.
Oh, my gosh. Like, it was throat punches?
Terrifying. Like, wow. One of the things that you do is keep photos of, like, children in your pocket so that you can pretend that you're a parent. If they're going to kill you, you show them the photos of the babies and be like, these children need me. Don't kill me. And I was
Did you ever watch Documentary Now? One about drones with like Jack Black and they just keep sending.
Oh, was it Gonzo style? That was a Gonzo style doc or something.
Yeah. And they keep sending them and they keep dying. But it's the, I can't remember if it's Jack Black or whoever keeps playing the same character. It's like a new intern, like, okay, now you're going to go. And they just keep dying. Yes. Sorry. You obviously did not die, but that makes me think of that.
But like then the one that really got me was when he's talking about they're getting ready for the kill shot. He's like, they're gonna tell you to look at the ground and look away. And he's like, never do it. You look into their eyes and you plead for their life, your life, because it makes it more difficult for them to execute you. And I like looked at my production manager and I'm like, I must have just turned white. And I was like, where am I going? Like, what is happening?
Oh my gosh, I can't even believe it.
And she was like, look, he's really intense. He just wants to make sure that you're going to be safe. And I'm like, I don't know about this. And she talked me down and it was completely fine. And Mexico City was amazing. And Delhi was amazing. And I loved every second of it. I still remember to keep baby pictures in my pocket when I travel. So that was useful. But yeah. But that project was like the most memorable, probably the most rewarding and just really cool. And so that was my Scotland stint. And then we were getting married. We wanted to buy a house. We wanted to have babies, do the whole thing. And I wanted to come back to Wisconsin for that. My family's here. And we did that. Came back to Milwaukee. Originally went to Chicago. Thought maybe Chicago. I did a project with The Onion down there. That was short-lived. The TV gig with them. But then it was like, Milwaukee's rad. Like, Milwaukee's really cool. It's a great city. It has a very similar vibe to Glasgow, where we were living in Scotland. My husband enjoyed Milwaukee, too. So this is where we landed. And then there's not a lot of TV happening here, which is fine. I'm like, I've got transferable skills. I moved into producing for advertising, which is very different. I learned a very different skill set and a very different way of operating. And Ryan was doing a similar thing at the same time. He moved into doing agency producing, ad agency producing. And he and I would commiserate a lot about how we felt like we could do it better. How we could do it differently, right? And then... Yeah. Bam, pandemic, we both lose our jobs and it's like, well, let's put our money where our mouth is and like start a thing. So we did. We launched a ski team because my maiden name is Wisniewski and would be how anybody at UWM might remember me, Lynn Wisniewski. And he's Ryan Dombrowski. So when our powers combine, we're a ski team and that's our company.
I love it. I love the name too. It's so active and I was looking at the website too. Like, I love the kind of retro athletic icon you guys use. Yes. I don't know if that's how you describe it, but it feels like an old Patagonia type of logo or something.
And that's what we wanted. We were like, our big thing was like, what do we want to wear on our stuff? You know, we wanted it to look cool. And like, we're both 80s babies. So it was like right in our wheelhouse. And so we had a really enjoyable experience with light burn marketing here in Milwaukee to create a brand for ourselves. And that was
awesome.
And that was a real treat to be on the receiving end of client treatments. Like, we were the clients and we're like, oh, this is what it feels like, nice. So that was it was a cool experience to develop that. And we're super pumped with how just the whole thing turned out. It made it feel really real. Like, again, like, we're like, wow, we're actually a thing. Like, this is, and the second time that I like got teary was I watched Ryan and my reel, like our reel of work. And I'm like, we did cool stuff, man. Like, it's hard to have that perspective all the time. And like, when I first watched the reel, I was like, we're good at our jobs. It's like a nice feeling.
Yeah, that's awesome. And you know, I don't think I checked this stuff out until we booked you, and it was like, Lynn is my partner at the production company. And I was like, wait a second. I don't think I've looked this up yet, because we, you know, talked about a lot of different things with Ryan. But I just love this video that you guys have playing here.
Tourism spot.
Okay. I was gonna say, I have so many questions with what you've already told us, but we're here now.
I'd love to hear more about this.
No. It's okay. Yeah. It's so hard when we're online, because it's like, you talk, and if I like try to jump in, you might be like, whoop, and then, you know, it gets all funky. And then, so
I just kept talking. I'm sorry.
Also, because like I went, you know, middle and high school in Kenosha. So that's okay. Another thing I'll ask you about. But we're here now. So yeah, tell me more about this. This is so much fun. Oh, man. I love it.
This is one of the first productions that I did with the agency Laughlin Constable as their agency producer, and their client was Wisconsin Tourism at the time. Okay. And so it was such a challenge in that we knew what the concept was. A German beer hall party, right? Like Oktoberfest, like we want a polka, we want a big party. And so they wanted to do it in Monroe, Wisconsin, and they had found this hall, right? But the hall did not look like that. The hall was just, it was like a big white gymnasium. And they like had a picture of this beer hall in Munich, Germany, like a legit one, right?
Yeah.
And they're like, can it look like this? Mm. And I was like, ugh. Like, oh man, like what? Oh, we're going to do our best. And then, I mean, look at it. It really came together.
Oh yeah.
And like that shot, that opening shot. It's funny. I don't cry a lot, but I'm telling you about all of these times that I cry, like the stress going into that shot, that wide shot,
uh-huh.
The first thing we captured, the very first thing, because we had all of the extras, everybody was in the hall. We had our Oompa band up on the stage. And so the directors are like, yeah, like we want to get this big party shot, you know, and plus the extras have been waiting for a while. It was like a long lead up to that moment. And I'm like, everybody's in a bad mood. I'm like, I'm really worried about this. I'm like, ugh. And like, it was just all of the stress of the weeks leading up to like getting to that moment. And they yelled action and like, look at those people. They like lost their minds and like started dancing with strangers, and the band like went bananas, and I was in the back of the hall just like like I was like, it's happening, they're doing it.
Oh, it's so amazing. Yeah, I was curious too about, like, you know, everyone looks so great, and that's a lot of talent to manage.
I think we had like 140 extras in there. Oh, but it's gosh. All like local Wisconsinites too, because it's Wisconsin tourism.
Yeah.
So we were like, hey folks, do you want to come dance? And like in there, in the bottom corner, you can see the shoulder and back of my own father dancing in the corner. I asked my mom and dad to come and be extras, and they did.
Oh, that's awesome.
Like, he was so pumped about this. Like, you can't tell it's him. It's literally just his shoulder. You'll see it. He's wearing a maroon sweater. And he's dancing in the corner. Hold on. It'll turn around and it'll happen. But every time there he is. See him down in the right, lower right corner.
Oh, nice.
That's my dad. And like every time the commercial would be on TV, you would be like on the edge of his seat and like, like look for himself and be like, yeah.
That's awesome. That's so much fun. And we actually worked with Laughlin Constable on one of these as well for Supper Club up at Lambeau, which was so much fun.
Did you guys do the behind the scenes of that?
No, we shot
the actual spot.
We did the spot. Yeah.
They set up one of the stands to be a Supper Club too.
Yep.
An experiential.
Yeah. So we didn't do, if there's a docu-style one, about the stand, we did the spot where
not the supper club spot, but the concession stand supper club spot.
Yes,
right. The less fancy one.
That supper club campaign went on to win like the big Pumbaa prize at the Milwaukee 99s. That like whole thing was the winning integrated campaign.
We weren't invited.
Well, a portion of that award belongs to you.
It's fun projects to do, like giant agency stuff too, but it's super stressful. So you always got to balance that, you know. I'm sure you're well aware.
Oh yes.
Well, and even more so on that one, the story that doesn't need to be longer than I'll make it here. Is we were doing that spot. We were, you know, working with Travel Wisconsin, and we had been doing some other things for like the web. And then we had this spot, and they're like, oh, you know, this is going to be a fun one. And we're actually going to run it, you know, for broadcast. And so because of that, we're actually going to bring in the agency. So we'd been working on all these different things, like not through an agency. We've been working directly with Travel Wisconsin and just with their team.
Right.
And so we're like, okay, yeah, great. You know, we'll talk to the agency. And then they ask for a few more things, like, oh, we should do this and should do that. And we're like, okay, well, that sounds great, but like, we already talked about a budget with you guys. Like, they're
for a docu-style project.
Yeah, anyone can just like make whatever requests they want if there's nothing that they have involved in it. Like, so we're like, what do you want to do? Like, are we supposed to do this now and like cast talent and stuff, you know? So we did all that. And then the last surprise we got was on the shoot day. We'd been setting up for an hour and a half, 2 hours, all this lighting stuff or whatever. And
we're getting ready to shoot. Yeah, we're minutes away from our first shot.
Right. And agency folk like show up. And also like one of the members of the client was also running really late. And they get there. And they like come over and they're like talking to us. And it was kind of like the first introduction. It's like, oh, hi. Yeah. Oh, you're with the agency. Yeah. Yeah. I'm the creative director on this spot. From this other person. Like, oh,
yeah.
I wasn't aware that there was another director.
We would have been talking before this moment.
Well, and we had been, and you know, just with different people. And it's like, hi, you know, we're Ryan and John. We're the directors. And they're like, oh, I'm the creative director. You're like, oh, okay. And he's like, I was envisioning something a little further back. And we're like,
let's do it. Moving. What do you think? Can we move this? And, you know, you're trying to balance just like the screaming going on in your mind with like acting. You're just like, well, we have been setting up for about 2 hours. And if we do that move, that'll put us about 45 minutes behind. But if you think it's really important and if the client agrees, we can certainly do that. and then we did do it.
That sounds very familiar.
Yeah, it's, you know, I can understand and empathize too with just big organizations and lots of things going on. And especially too, they're like, okay, we're doing a lot of work with Backflip. Let's bring them in. They can help us out with this. The agency's still in charge. Okay, but they'll do it. And it looks like scripts are getting done. Okay, make sure you're there on the shoot day. Make sure you're on the shoot day. Okay, we're here. You know, like now that we've done a lot more agency work, I can understand how stuff like that happens.
The agency producer's job, and I'm curious if that person was involved in what you guys were doing at all, is to like try and help navigate that, right? So the having a production knowledge to understand that the ask that they're asking is like gonna blow the budget, is gonna take 2 hours, is gonna, you know, that whole thing, and like being able to like navigate that between both parties, where like, you know, the job is to advocate for both sides. You need to advocate for production, right? Because you understand the realities of what they're up against and what cost implications there are. But then you also, back to the production company, have to advocate for what your agency people want. Because if you don't, your agency's like, why do you even work for us? You know what I mean? So right. it's a real balancing act and tricky. And you're always the messenger, and like everybody hates you.
Yeah. And it's, you know, being small production company in the Midwest, like John and I, we co-direct. One of us will produce, one of us will direct and be a cinematographer. We also get to work on enough big projects where we both get to co-direct together, but we're also producing them. So, you know, it's all the hats that you get to wear. But it's, you know, sometimes we have to really be clear about, okay, so creatively the buck's going to stop with you. Where are you? Over here. Buck's going to stop with you, and I will make production decisions on this one, you know, so we'll split it up. And part of that too is like just communication. And, you know, we've been at this, we're coming up on 15 years next year, actually, in business is like, hey, according to our registry, you're coming up on a big anniversary. You want to take out a big ad? but that's cool, you know, and we've been making it up because we didn't have necessarily the benefit of going. I mean, we didn't take the opportunity to go somewhere. I know John worked with another production company for a little while and bounced around. Where are you at? You're at D-Films and then you were at the Geo Group. So yeah. He got to see kind of the way other shops run. I went right out of college from, you know, with my communication arts degree and almost a second degree in computer science. And I worked in computer science and then John and I built this business on the side. So for me, I've just been making it up, you know, all along the way.
Well, now about, I mean, everybody's doing that all the time.
Well, and you realize that too, you know, and 14 years in, we've learned a few things. And one of them, like the communication. And I just realized that, like, we're on set. We did a big commercial with Ho-Chunk that we're still finishing. And it turned, because we're crazy creatives, it turned from a commercial and some tutorials to essentially like 13 commercials because we shot them and filmed them all the same. Because we were in studio, it was kind of a scale thing that we were able to do. But what often happens, you know, with a big crew, it's like, okay, how much longer is it going to take to get to this? I need to be at that shot 20 minutes ago. And they're like, oh, well, we need 10 more minutes to do it right. And I hadn't thought of this until well after. I'd be like, okay, you guys saw the schedule, you know, a couple days in advance. We're all working on this together. You can go over, but we're not going to have overtime because I need you to go faster. You know, having a conversation like that can be a lot more helpful as opposed to getting at the end of the day and it's like, okay, we're 2.5 hours over. Now I have to pay everyone overtime. That's coming out of my budget because I don't ask the, you know, we kind of within reason stick to our budget. And if there's any major issues, we would add, you know, talk about that and advocate for a bigger budget. But in this case, it's like, okay, well, this was on us for going over and now I have to pay overtime for 6 people for several days. So I was thinking about that and I was like, let's just communicate next time. Be like, hey, we're not going to do overtime. So how soon do you think we can get to that shot?
Right. Suddenly things start moving a little faster, right?
Yeah.
That's funny that way. That's the stuff that they don't teach in school. That sounds like a cliche, mm-hmm. but it's the, like, you're in school and it's like, oh yeah. So, you know, go to school and go to the comm arts program. Now I still like what I did. And there are times when Ryan and I'll talk and be like, you remember that like shot we talked about in whatever class, like forever ago, that'd be kind of cool to do something like this here. But beyond that, like, there's a lot of days where, like, the challenging work in front of us is not about, like, you know, composing, like, Ozu and making sure that all the colored vases on the table line up so that people can appreciate my attention to detail. It's like, holy crap, we are already this far behind. You know, this person, like, this, like, intern didn't show up today. And how are we going to, like, it's all this, like, but I don't know. I've thought before, like, talking about your friends in business school, I thought if I could do it again, maybe I would have, again, like, business and comm arts. Maybe that wouldn't have helped. I mean, maybe it's all just experience.
I got a business certificate, and I can tell you it's the same thing. Like, you learn the business concepts and you learn the theory, but, like, until you're out in the world and, like, doing it, you, I don't know, like, how you teach it. Like, so much of what we do is that interpersonal, like, management of the communication and personalities. And, mm-hmm. like, I mean, for a producer especially, like, you have to be able to talk to everyone and understand everyone and, like, know, like, what they need and, like, what they want. And you're also tasked with, like, keeping it fun and enjoyable. Like, that's really a, I don't know that that's a skill you can teach. I feel like it's something you either, like, have a knack for, like, being cool and, like, rolling the punches and, like, it, you know, and, like, it's something Ryan and I have talked about too, like, in production, because, like, we come across great talent a lot, like, great talent in, like, whether it's editing or shooting or, you know, and then there's, like, that other component of, like, but are they going to be okay on set? Are they going to handle the pressure? Are they going to be able to, you know, like, deal with all of the things that come at you in production? Because, like, sometimes it's obvious that a person might not be equipped to do that. And then, like, he and I as producers also, like, try to figure out how can we still champion their talent? How can we as the producer protect them from that and let them focus on what they're really good at doing, which is editing, right? And, like, save them from the bullshit. And, like, we're the ones going, hey, it's cool. Like, everything's great.
right. Yeah. And I feel like we do that a lot to everyone, you know, and I hope that people don't think it's disingenuous, but that's how we can continue to overcome just all the obstacles that come up. I feel like, because in an edit, there's going to be a ton of things. In producing, there's going to be a ton of things. There's going to be things in communication. I know we have a longtime client and we don't work with one of these members of the company, and they just posted a comment like, hey, can I see all the interviews? Because I want to help form the creative messaging, because I'm doing the digital messaging. Our editor had already finished the first edit as a rough for internal review, and was just really concerned, like, oh, what do we do here? You know, and I could just tell that he was very concerned. And I was like, oh, don't worry, I got you. And just jump in with the client. I'm like, hey, yeah, absolutely. Here's all the stuff. We'll get that to you. Here's the rough edit that we have so far. You know, let me know if you have any questions about that. We can certainly pivot as much as needed to match up with messaging. I don't want to throw it all away. So let's just see what we can do here. You know, just a positive message from there, protecting your team, protecting your editing. And it's all of that creative problem solving and working together to create something great. Because we might have had a completely different opinion on how to do something, and they might want to go in a different direction. And that's okay. And we'll figure it out. And it'll likely be better when we come to some kind of agreement on how to move forward with those two ideas in mind.
Totally. But it is the best when the client sees the edit and was like, oh, you guys got it right. when that happens, you're like, oh, yeah. Yes, like, we know what we're doing. I feel like it rarely happens. The client always wants to, you know, change something or upend it entirely. But, like, the moments where they're like, oh, yeah, we were concerned about this, but you guys actually did what we needed, you're just like, yeah.
Yeah, you know, I feel like it's probably something that, like, a baker gets too fat more quickly, or, like, somebody who makes donuts. You know, you make donuts for a year, and then somebody comes in, they're like, yeah, you freaking killed it. You make great donuts. But with, like, our stuff, there's so many moving pieces. There's so many different things. It takes... You know, it takes years. It takes reps to get into this. Yeah. And that's the interesting thing I think about with school. We talk about this a lot. I'd be interested to hear your take on it. I'm very happy to have gotten a degree. You know, it was a good experience for me. These days, though, and it's funny when I talk to, like, the university students, I try to be very careful about this. But if somebody wants to go into production, my recommendation is, like, hey, take a year off. Learn some stuff online, because you can learn a lot of the basic fundamentals, and then go work for somebody for a year. Go intern with somebody. And I've seen that, you know, with one of our guys, one of our best guys, he took a year off, worked with us, went back to school for a little bit for production, and then hasn't been back to school. And that guy is, you know, years ahead of somebody who went to school and comes out with a degree, and they're like, hey, I have a degree. here's my salary requirement, and I don't know anything, but I got a degree. I'm more prone to work with a guy who, you know, worked with me for free for 3 months or 6 months and learned how we want to do it. So in the production world, you know, unless you are going somewhere where you can make connections, which is also very important. You know, you think about how much you're going to pay for connections, but I recommend people kind of take a step back, just go work for somebody, and then they can see, you know, where they want to go from there. Because a lot of people just want to be directors, and there's not enough room for everyone to be a director.
Well, that tangible experience is so, so important. And like, for me, it was via internships, like the summers between class and then even semesters was to try and get that hands-on real production experience. I mean, at one point in college, I was like, maybe I'm going to go do news. And then I did like my news station internship and I was like, nope, not for me. But it was like, I don't know how else I would have like figured that out. I had a lot of different work experience before graduating paired with the degree. Right. But like, I remember like talking to people who like just got the degree, right. They just did the studies and got their grades and then they're like, okay, world. And I was like, I mean, just for me, I couldn't have gotten a kickstart in my career without the networking that those internship and work experiences had gotten for me. So like, and sometimes when I talk to students who haven't done any of that, I don't even like know what to tell them, right? Like when it's like, I'm graduating and here's my degree, like, how do I get a job like you? And I'm like, do you know anyone in the industry? Yeah. Because unfortunately, it's awesome that you have a 4.0 and that you wrote a killer paper on like film theory. But like, if you don't.
Yeah. I'm like, no one gives a shit.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I'm like.
It also comes down to like, now there are roles in the industry that don't have this as much. But when you're talking about like creative work or a creative like job, I suppose I'm doing a disservice to other industries to say that it's not similar, like maybe in business or in finance or whatever. But it, like you said, if you've got this resume and you've got a 4.0 and like you've got your, you know, here's your school experience and here's where you worked, you know, in the summers during school, and you're applying to be an editor, and you show me a demo reel and it's total crap, it doesn't matter. And if you give me somebody who dropped out of high school and who's like dynamic and cuts an amazing demo reel that just blows you away and is creative and makes you cry, makes you laugh, you're like, yeah, you're hired. You're an editor. Like you. So I guess that could happen in other industries too, but like, if you're doing like quantitative type stuff, it's like, if you can do math and you can calculate these things, you can work, you know, as an accountant.
Yeah. But balance like, the books.
If you can't, if you don't have the thing that's kind of hard to teach, you know, that the raw material of creative stuff, you can't do that role that you're going for. Maybe you can do some work in the industry, but.
No, I mean, completely. I mean, the takeaway from school that I think is important, it was different. I like got differing points of view. I'm the youngest of five kids, and like most of my family went pre-professional. There's a doctor, there's a lawyer. My sister has like a graduate degree in education. Like they were like really formulated paths. And I remember I didn't declare when I got into Madison, and my mom was flipping out. And she's like, so what are you studying then? And I'm like, I'm just going to do the prereqs and see what happens. In when I got into this fall semester of my sophomore year, when it was like push comes to shove a little bit of like, you got to declare something. I went to the career center and like went and talked to a career counselor. And I was like, look, I don't know what I want to do with my life. And like, I got to declare a major. And so they had me do this test, this like computer exam where you answer a bunch of personality questions and blah, blah, blah. Oh, and then the machine spits out potential work for you. So I got like all of these sheets, one of which was circus clown.
Oh, that's, there's that's still a chance.
That you can do. But one of them was a producer, like a TV and video producer. And it was like a kind of a light bulb moment for me. And I was like, wow, that's not something I considered, but I read like what the job description was. And then as in tandem with that, the career counselor was like, and this is what your major would be. It was comm arts. And like, I looked at some of what the coursework was, you know, like filmmaking and like all that. I'm like, wait a minute, that's like a thing I can do in school. And she's like, yeah. And I'm like, that's for me. Ding, ding, ding. Then my parents freaked out again because they're like, what are you going to do? Are you going to move to LA? What are you going to do? And so they were the ones who pushed me into the business certificate. It made them feel a little bit better. I got that on the side. But the big takeaway, and then this is like my husband's theory on it. And I think that school in the UK, he's Scottish, it's just different. Like, he got a degree in geography and now he works as a digital marketing manager. But he's like, it doesn't matter. He's like, in school, you should study what is interesting to you and what you want to know about and what you want to learn more about. He's like, because it teaches you a way of like thinking bigger picture. Think like it employs critical thinking. It changes your worldview. And he's like, it's not about the, now I have a skill and I can go do
specific skills.
Right. And now I can go do that skill. Right. It's just like, you just have a different way of thinking and maybe problem solving and like working through stuff. So that's like it's like a higher level skill. Right. Which I mean, I think is kind of what we were talking about earlier and what we were hinting at about like some of those like bigger picture skills that you kind of have or you don't. But like, I completely agree in the sense of like, if you know that you want to be a video editor and that's your passion and you definitely want to do it, you don't need a 4-year degree to go do that. Like, go get that tangible experience and do that.
I don't think, you know, and that's Ryan's question too. What advice? So we'll ask that specifically if you have specific advice for people entering the production world. But I think it dovetails from that idea. And Tarantino said it too. I think it was Tarantino. It was like, study philosophy.
Yeah.
Study thinking, study learning, study, you know, or like geography. Like, there's something so valuable to learning how the world works and how the human mind works that is what makes good filmmakers, is what he was saying.
Oh, totally.
And he's like, you learn how to filmmake when you're making films. Like, make films in college with your friends, but, you know, learn something else. And so that's kind of where I go to, like, don't pay all this money for a, like, you know, again, I got one, a communication arts degree. If you want, get a philosophy, you know, get something that is going to help you be a better citizen and person and thinker. And through that, you're going to tell better stories. And how do you tell those stories? Well, you'll learn the tools when you start using them.
My other certificate is in integrated liberal studies, which is exactly that. It was all classics. It was all philosophy. It was how I was getting those prereqs done. Because like through the integrated liberal studies program, I was like, tick, there's my social science. Tick, there's my whatever else. And so that was like the third component of my degree at Madison. In the integrated liberal studies aspect, they only offered certificate. If I could have like majored in that, I totally would have done it, because it's exactly what you're talking about. It's all of the philosophy and like, you know, I remember sitting in a TA session in which we were evaluating, I think therefore I am. And I just remember being like, whoa. And that your college experience should be, right? Mm-hmm. I think so. I think it should be that bigger thinking, you know, what's the meaning of life stuff.
Right. And communication arts had that rhetoric side too. So we had to take some rhetoric classes, and that was my favorite college class over production classes, was rhetoric and speeches or something like that, where we had to analyze some major speeches and then write our own or write something. And it was basically like analyze the argumentative or the argument in there and how people were communicating. It was fascinating to me.
Well, and like still hugely helpful in what you're doing, right? Mm-hmm. It wasn't like a mega tangible skill set, but like, there's takeaways from doing that. I mean, the other advice that I would give for people entering the production world is also what like you're talking about. Your network of contacts is so important. I wouldn't have gotten any job any job that I got without somebody picking up the phone or writing an email that I knew on my behalf. And like each internship and each job, like consequently all came from that. Like I never have gotten a job where I put my resume out into the world or into an application and had someone pick up the phone and call me just from like making an application. Never once. And like, that was a really rude awakening after graduation, because when I was looking for work before I got into the PAGE program, I was submitting my resume, right? Which I felt really chuffed about. I'm like, I had a 3.8 GPA and like, I went to Madison and like, get ready world, here I come. And nobody gave a shit. Every job I applied for that I felt like I was super qualified for, never once got a phone call. And because somebody at the news station where I had my internship, which I didn't enjoy, called NBC and like got me into the PAGE program, and that like begat literally every other aspect of my career. So the takeaway for anybody who wants to work in production, meet people, have meetings. I called them informational interviews. You go on informational interviews where you say, can I buy you a cup of coffee and talk to you for 15 minutes just about what you're doing? And like, can I tell you about some of what I'm doing? And if you think that I'm on the right track. People love to give advice, right? People love to talk about themselves and give advice. Mm-hmm. So exploit that, do that a ton. And then, you know, 6 months down the road, when you see that that same person is trying to hire, guess what? You get to follow up with them directly with your resume and be like, hey, remember me? Like, that's how you get the job. That's how.
Well, and let's connect this to what you're looking for when you're talking about people on set. You need skill, but you're like, can this person the situation? And that requires that you know them somehow. Like, right. And I've had this conversation a few times and over the years of just like, well, you know, like this is kind of like client stuff with sales or whatever. Like, it's like, well, they should choose the best option, you know, the best logical option based on whatever. And I'm always just like, that's not how humans function. Mm-mm. They function like, I know this person. I feel good about them because I know them and I know what to expect. And I'm choosing that way, even though this over here is, you know, maybe better quality, the budget's in the right spot, whatever, you know.
Oh, all the time. And I was always surprised how that would happen too with my agency work. When we would have new projects come up, inevitably it would be like, let's go with this director that we've worked with before and I'm comfortable with. Never mind the fact that they don't have anything in the reel that fits this project and these 10 other directors who we don't know anything about. Like, it's clearly in their wheelhouse and they know exactly what this is. But I like working with this person because I'm comfortable with them. So let's just do it with them. Like, I was always shocked at when that would happen.
Yeah.
So we do have another question here too. As we're rocking through these, what are you most excited about in terms of innovation?
Yeah,
we have a plant.
I love it. Innovation. Wow. This is something he and I talk about a lot, because I feel like the future of what we're doing is changing like by the second all the time. Right. And some of what he and I got our training in, right. This like an older model of like agency work where you had these like giganda budgets, right. To like go and make a TV spot. Like, let's talk like late '90s before internet advertising or anything was even a thing. And like making a TV spot for broadcast was like the behemoth. And that's what everybody put their like marketing dollars into. Like, I think we're still in recovery from that time, because it's like hard to change people's mind views out of that, right? Mm-hmm. We're like, I don't know that a big expensive TV Super Bowl ad is where your money needs to go or where you're going to get the biggest bang for your buck, right? There's like so many other ways to do marketing now that are like, especially to a younger demographic, like they don't watch TV. Do you know what I mean? So like, I'm always interested in the media side in learning what new ways people are pushing content out there. You know, like I was mega interested in augmented reality. I still am. And I still think there's like going to be a lot to that. And yeah, like any new kind of cutting edge, like how are people trying to market or get the message out in a different way? I always want to know about, because I'm really worried about turning into like the oldie McOld old, right? Who's like, oh, she's still stuck back in the early noughties. You know,
once we've got our Elon chips, you know, we're all going to need.
But it is the future, right? What is the future? What's going to be the new big way of like getting content out into the world? And so it's like, I kind of want to push Ryan and Maya and our business a little more into that strategy side of things, right? Like, and helping our clients think about that stuff. You know, because I'm like, of course, we're not going to turn down a job when someone says, hey, we want to make a TV spot and we have a big budget to do it. Great. And I told them, I'm like, we can do that in our sleep because we've done it 100 times before. But like, well,
and it is kind of funny that like, I don't think a lot of clients are thinking this way. I think it actually is some agency folk that are still thinking this way when it's like, oh, this is going to be made for broadcast.
Right.
It's like,
that's still like.
Right. Ooh, broadcast.
It's still the big pinnacle.
It's like, oh, if it's the web, just slap whatever crap on there and it'll be fine. Like, no, like, and we've always approached it as like, it has to be the level that you're looking for wherever it is. Like, I don't want it to just look like junk because it's like online instead of broadcast. Like, so.
Yeah. And like, and that's something that I want Ryan and I to be able to communicate more about ourselves, right? Like we always think like we're trying to position ourselves between like a big agency production or what I just keep calling guys with cameras, right? Cause like a guy with a camera is going to come to you and tell you that he'll make you a thing and he's going to be the cheapest, right? So that's always what's attractive. Cause he'll be like, you want something for $5,000? I can do it. I shoot, I edit. But then I'm like, but dude doesn't have any bigger picture look at like what's the point of what you're making or like can help you think that through, right?
And like or might not be there in a month or 3 months.
Right. Exactly. And so like we from like our prehistory and our agency side have some of that thinking. And so it's like we bring that to the table. But how do you explain that, right? Mm-hmm. How do you explain that to a client when like the biggest thing they want to know about is what numbers on the bottom of the bid.
Yeah, I like to think of it too, like a little bit like the lottery. Like, hey, there are really great guys with cameras out there. And sometimes, you know, people you know win the lottery. Are you going to win big? Are you going to win consistently? No.
Right.
That's why you need an agent or a creative agency is kind of how we style it. But that's why you need somebody who's been around, is going to be around, and thinks about these things in a more grand way as opposed to I just need an interview and we'll slap it up on the website. It's like, whoa, let's talk about your brand.
Exactly. That kind of thinking. And that's that, like, it's that less tangible aspect of what we do. And it's sometimes I think is hard to communicate that or like market that aspect of what you're offering.
Yeah, absolutely. So innovation is simply that trying to stay current is hard as well. Like we were joking, I think John had a prompt of like, we want it to be TikTok like, and we were laughing about like, what does that even mean? And like, what the heck is TikTok? And I was like, oh dang, we're kind of old. Like
well, there was a camera though, I think we were looking at, there was like some new camera and it had some feature and we're just like, why would you need whatever? And then we like both looked at each other. We're like, oh no.
Yeah.
We're old.
It's happening.
Yeah. And when, you know, when people talk about Snapchat or TikTok and they're like, why do we even need to do that? I'm like, okay, people are at these places and we may not get it.
There's a lot of Asian men.
It's nuts.
Scrolling TikTok and we need
to. See, I mean, this is exactly what I mean. Like, this is where the big brands are right now is TikTok because everyone's there except for apparently us.
I'm just trying to maintain my
age.
No, I'm trying to maintain a good, healthy relationship with my family and my wife.
You know, so what I'm thinking about too, though?
That's not a great place.
Like, I looked, so I was sitting down for the first time last night and watched some TikTok for like 15 minutes. Like, I TikTok. I think it's awesome.
Wait, you only did it for 15 minutes?
I know, right? I watched like three things. But what I realized is, like, every generation has their TikTok. You know, it's a weird thing to say, but like, John and I will talk about like our parents who just have the TV on. Like, my dad wasn't even in the room. He had left and the TV was still on. Mm-hmm. Like, the TV is the boomers' TikTok. And that's something, you know, that's interesting to think about.
It's exciting to think about what's future TikTok. Mm-hmm. Or like, what's future internet? Think about
next Tuesday's TikTok, because it happens so fast. It's silly.
But like, that paradigm shift going from the analog world of like filmmaking, and then it was like, whap, here's the internet. And then like that changed everything. And it's like, we're naive to think that something like that isn't going to happen again. Like, you joked about putting a chip in your head, but like, hey, you know, like, it's, what's that thing going to be?
I know it.
I
know
it. Totally. From under us.
Yeah. Again. I got the Bill Gates chip in my arm. So
I know it's going to happen, because I know that, like, you know, when I would make fun of grandparents about, like, my dad tells a story about teaching my grandpa to use his computer, and my dad would be like, okay, just take your mouse over there and click on that thing. My grandpa's like, it's not going over there. It's like
going this way,
going over here. And he's like, you're doing that. Like, you, and he couldn't connect that, you know? And so I'm like, it's funny, a funny story, but I know in the future, like, yeah, people are doing augmented reality with, whether it's like implant or wearable glasses or whatever, I'm going to be the old guy, you know, who my son's just like, yeah, dad, just flick your eyes up to the right. And I'm going to be like, I can't get the thing to, you know.
But for but for what we do, like, that's scary, right? Like, we got to be ahead of it so that
or we have to identify the right talent.
That's the other thing. Get those youngins in.
it's okay, I think, because I don't know that anyone has that much neuroplasticity to be able to like shift your like complete way of thinking every generation.
Right.
So like, it's okay. We're gonna go older. We're going to have life experience that they don't have and be able to like run projects in a way that they can't figure out, but they're going to know how to harness the new thing.
And our wizened old selves can help guide the youth in the ways of the world. There's a lot of
wrinkly, shriveled. Yeah.
There is, though. It's hard to put a value on that,
absolutely,
but there's so much value in that.
Absolutely.
And like, you know, I mean, it's like when people get aged out of industries, which is a thing that I think happens in ours. I'm like, it's such a mistake, because the value of that person's experience, like, it's hard to make it a line item, right?
Yeah.
Like, an hour of editing costs this, but what is 30 years of experience cost?
Well, and having the capability to have that 30 years of experience, but then more current understanding of trends, like, we haven't advertised on TikTok or Snapchat for any of our clients yet, although we have done vertical stuff for Instagram. But even that is like 5 years old. And it makes me think about like when the internet came around and people were like, hey, we got to start advertising on this internet. I'm sure most agencies were like, that's unnecessary. You know, just kind of like, we're like, Snapchat, TikTok, those are stupid.
Huge I'm huge on Periscope. Are we not still doing that? Or is it...
but you know, that's what I think about, because like right now, where are people? They're on, you know, they're advertising on TikTok,
and it's not like
our clients necessarily are like, you know, knocking down the door to get that, but it's a thing to think about. Like, do we have specific clients that we should say, hey, you do Instagram, what are you doing on TikTok these days?
Right, exactly. And I love Amanda's comments about Black Mirror. I love that show. love that show. And Charlie Brooker, the guy who writes it, is from the UK, and he had a series over in the UK called TV Wife, which if you ever want to YouTube, like, something that's so on the nose with, like, what we do and, like, funny and satirical and great, Charlie Brooker's TV Wife is amazing. And he writes Black Mirror as well. But that guy's, like, a genius. Finger on the pulse of, like, current society and how we're consuming things and the very dark direction it could lead.
Yeah, it's like in the near future. Right. But then there's the social media, like, rating each other episode, and that's happening in China.
Oh, come on. And what was the one in which the cartoon character was running for public office and it was Donald Trump?
The cartoon character,
I swear to God, Donald Trump said the same thing. Like, I was like, this happened. Black Mirror happened.
Part of it was it's getting away from us. Like, it's gotten away. It's become its own thing. We don't control it.
The follow-up to The Masked Singer, the next, like, follow-on of that show is, like, what the heck is it called? I don't remember. But it's, like, digital avatars or whatever, like, singing and performing. And I'm just like, holy crap, that's, like, another episode of the Black Mirror where... Yeah, I don't know that this is gets back to the thing about, like, well, we just got to, like, keep bringing new talent in, because I don't know that I can get my thinking around to that, like, because I just, there's certain things that I'm like, I just don't know if that's a good idea. And I could just force myself away from it, but, like, I have a way of thinking about things. Not trying to be old fashioned, but I think certain things are better ideas and certain things are not. Yeah, I'm going to get left behind. I'm going to be old.
Yeah. Well, no. you mentioned the neuroplasticity, like, you know, there's only so much that we can hold in our mind and be experts at. And if you want to learn something new, you got to get rid of something. And for us, like, I consume TikTok. So I know what people are doing on there. I can't even begin to think, like, right now, how to advertise. Because a lot of the, like, maybe 1 out of 20 advertisements, I don't swipe past in the first half a second.
Right.
So I guess maybe studying some of those, I could have a better idea. But, like, it's just different. It's so different than what we're used to. And I haven't taken the time to learn or think more about it. And we can choose to do that, or we can choose to work with and bring on people who have those skills. That's probably where I land too.
Yes.
John's going to run to the restroom.
Bring me the Utes who know what's going on. I will grandma you into the production world.
Bring on the Utes. Isn't that funny too? Like, age is such a weird thing as well, because I'm assuming you're in your 30s, like we're all in our 30s.
Yes.
Maybe just past the middle 30s. But, like, that is so young these days. You know, 30 is the new, I don't know, 17 of 30 years ago. Because, like,
right.
You're coming of age when you're, like, 18. I don't know, pre-1990, and you're a man, you're a woman, you're going to go out and do your thing in the world and have a family. Now, you know, people are 35 and 40 and just starting their families and landing in their careers.
I'm just so glad about that shift, because I, like, the choices that I would have made in my early 20s about, like, this is going to be my life partner and I'm going to procreate and I'm gonna you know, like, have my house and my job, like, I can't even, like, her, like, that girl, that early 20s girl, like, what a mess she would be in. So I'm glad. Yeah. I'm really glad of it. And I would say that to anyone, like, go out, like, live your life somewhere else, preferably than, like, where you were planted, because that's gonna bring its own you know, lessons, and, like, go live your life and, like, do some stuff. It's really, like, the only opportunity you have in your lifetime to do that. go do it, make mistakes, mm-hmm. learn some things, and then come back and, you know, make choices about how you want to establish yourself and get settled.
Yeah. I think all that's really great advice. And like you said, like it's one of the times that you can do that, you know, maybe one of the only times in your life that you can do that. So take advantage of that. I'll also say, I think, you know, it's not like we've discovered something new, like, oh, you know, people shouldn't do this until they're older because you don't know when you're younger. I think we have just created older children, you know, like, okay, well, your school's not done when you're 16 or 15 and you're in the real world. Your school's not done until you're 22 or 30 even, you know, so you're still going to be treated like a child and you're going to be educated like a child and you're not going to have the responsibility. So part of what we're doing is like our kids help with everything, including like groceries. Like, hey, we're going to go get groceries. 12-year-old, here's the list. Go get it. And, you know, here's some money to go buy, you know, half the stuff or whatever.
No, totally.
You're going to also help plan this stuff so that you're not a 30-year-old who has never shopped on your own before. Because that's another big thing. Like, you've lived with your parents until you were 30, until they forced you to move out. Like, I think we're largely creating older children is what we're doing. And so there's certainly an opportunity to do better. Yeah.
Yes. No, I totally agree. But then, like, the flip side of that is that they're also exposed to so much more than you or I were at that time. Do you know what I'm saying? In terms of like the content that they're consuming, like even with our 2.5-year-old,
it's scary. Yeah.
Like when he picks up the tablet and like is watching stuff on YouTube and like, I don't know what he's watching. And like, that is bananas to me. Like at their fingertips, all of that like information and like that they can absorb, like, that's the whole other side of it.
Do you feel a weight of responsibility being in the industry in the way that I do? I'm behind this. I'm one of the ones who's like, you know, using psychology and you know, rhetoric and stuff to influence people to buy crap that they don't need. You know, or what, like, it's a interesting challenge that I have going on mentally sometimes. Just like at the end of the day, like, you're like, yeah, okay, this is great. This is how we'll serve that client and whatever. And then you're just like, what is this thing that people are like, that I'm convincing them now to buy?
Yeah, no, it's a real question. And it's like, it's nice, I think, to be in a position that you guys are in and that I'm now in the ski team, in which we have the control in which to make that choice, right? Like, yeah. Is that content we want to make or not? Where like one of the things at working for an agency, you got served your project and your client and it was like, go make that. I don't care if you agree with it. I don't care if you know, like the manner in which we're going to say this message, it's your job to make it. So the autonomy one feels in having their own business, like that's huge to me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we are at 125 and normally we do a round of, I don't know if you got this far, of two truths and a lie. We're not going to do a round, but I would still like to do two truths and a lie with you. And we've even got this little thing.
That's
so
cute.
That was John.
You sped your voice up to sound like a little kid.
Yeah. So I can vamp a little too. And your goal here is you're going to come up with three different stories to tell us. And people at home can guess as well. And one of those stories is going to be a lie. So as I'm vamping, you have a chance to think about this. A good way to do it too is for your lie, think about a story that maybe your husband tells or a friend tells that you could easily retell in a very believable way, but make it about you. Another good way to lie is to just change kind of a significant detail in a story, not a minor detail, but a significant detail in a story so that you could fool, you know, maybe Ryan watching or if your husband or anybody who knows you really, really well is watching.
What a struggle like that.
Yeah. So that's your tips. John wants you to struggle. You can take a minute to write some of these down if you'd like.
I kind of want to.
Yeah. No, that's fine. I can promo other things. So let's see. I can pull up my happy hour Notion over here. And we are back next week. We've actually got Matthew Pearson, a seminarian for the Diocese of Madison, who I actually played beanbags with or against a couple weeks ago, and he destroyed me. He is very good at beanbags, but we'll hear the rest of his story, his discernment story, which is really, really fun. We probably captured it several years ago, actually, but it's been a while, and we do these every year, so I don't remember it off the top of my head, so that'll be great. What else do we got? Let's see. I know we've got Father Tate, who works at the CDF in Rome. What is the CDF? Somebody help me, Carolyn, or somebody. The Conference of Doctrine of the Faith or something. And I just learned that the Catholic Inquisition eventually, you know, essentially rebranded. That's what it is. It's the part, the organization that makes sure that people are being orthodox and not doing bad things.
I think of the Monty Python skit every time I hear that, where they just keep banging on people's doors and they're like, nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition.
That's right. I do know that quote. I guess I didn't realize that was Monty Python because I have not seen that.
I haven't seen it either. I heard it on record. My dad.
Oh, that's right.
A record of the comedy skits.
For a long time, I thought that Monty Python was individual, a guy named Monty Python. But then I learned and was exposed to that whole world. And they're all geniuses and very funny.
Hopefully before you went to England.
Yes, thankfully. How embarrassing would that have been? There was a lot of embarrassing moments, like working, like moving over there and saying things like a real dumb American, especially when it came to pronouncing like place names. Yeah.
I heard that they were not overly popular there because part of what we find funny as Americans is the accent on top of the joke as well.
Oh, funny. Yeah, so I can see that.
When you think about it, like if you're just speaking in a way that everybody else does, then you're just left with that raw material. And then like, you know, that's what adds humor for us.
But I can attest that they are still very, very popular over there. But there's definitely a British humor, like a UK humor that is so bizarre. And like my husband's really into it. There is this like comedy duo called Vic and Bob. Stupidest, weirdest shit you've ever seen. And he laughs his ass off. And I'm like, what is this fever dream? And he's like, it's hilarious. Vic and Bob. And they're very popular over there.
All right, I'm going to look it up.
Little Britain. Like, it's weird, weird UK humor. Sorry.
You should also recommend Auntie Donna something something. It's a show on Netflix. It's like, they're not Australian. What's the other one? They're Kiwis. They're
New Zealanders.
New Zealanders, yeah. And it's hilarious and weird. And it basically what you were just saying of, what even is this nonsense? Like,
yeah,
that's what that is. So good. It's so different.
Indeed. I got my two truths and a lie.
All right. So if you're playing at home, you can definitely participate as well. I realized I've got a branded shirt on and we could give branded shirts away too. So if you win, we'll send you a branded shirt of your color and Lynn, we'll just send you some.
I was going to say, how about if you're a guest on the show?
Yeah, maybe we'll do like the Tom Hanks. You gotta get to the five timers club before.
Oh, man.
No, you get a shirt after one.
Sweet.
All right. So what do you got for us?
Okay. So one time when I was working on Windy City Live in Chicago, we were doing this live hit on the river in Chicago, and our host Ryan Shimerini was supposed to be kayaking in the river with a lav mic on, talking to us, doing the live hit from our truck. Right before we went live TV, he tipped over in said kayak, fried the mic, and then I was standing there I was the only other one standing there, and they handed me the stick mic, and I had to field it like a live reporter and send it back to studio. That was number one. Number two, when I was first working on Late Night with Jimmy Fallon, they were coming up with a lot of sketches, and they needed in one of the sketches, they needed somebody to play Jimmy's wife. And so very randomly, I sort of looked like Jimmy's wife, like his real wife. And they're like, Lynn, will you come and do this? Will you play Jimmy's wife in this sketch? And I was like, oh my God, yes. And then I was also secretly thinking, if I get established as Jimmy's wife, I'm going to play his wife like the entire run of this show, and it's going to be the best. Mm-hmm. Plus, they give you a little bit of money when you do an appearance. So I did that sketch. And then about a week later, they started doing a Real Housewives of Late Night sketch in which Jimmy played a version of his own wife. He was in drag as his own wife. And so my dreams of playing his wife again were dashed, and I never got to do it.
Did you did the sketch on TV, did you say, or did
yes,
it not air?
I did. Okay. I did the first sketch on TV, thought that was setting me up really nice. After that sketch, he played himself in drag. His wife in drag. He played his wife as himself in drag. Anyway, third one. Whilst hanging out in Glasgow before the Commonwealth Games, which is like a mini version of the Olympics, in which it's just the Commonwealth countries that participate, I was with my mom, who was over visiting, and we were heading into town. And my mom, like, bless her, it was one of her first times in the UK, and, you know, like, getting her into the UK, and she, like, wants to ask questions about everything. Like, wow, they have grass here? We have grass at home, too. Like, that kind of a thing. And I'm like, just chill out. Yes, like they definitely do a lot of the same things. And we're coming up to this intersection and there's a lot of barricades and police officers standing around. And she's like, I wonder what's going on. I'm going to ask the police officer. I'm like, please don't talk to anyone. Don't ask what's going on. It doesn't matter. It's nothing. I'm like, let's just get to our destination. I think we're going to a restaurant. And she's like, excuse me, sir, what's happening here? And he goes, the Queen of England's coming in 10 minutes. And I was like, haha, that's really funny. I'm like, I actually live here. I know she's an American, but I actually live here, so you don't need to bullshit us. And he's like, no, I'm serious. She's going to be here in 10 minutes. And my mom's like, we got to wait and meet the queen. And I'm like, I don't think this is happening. So like, we go over to this barricade, and there's a handful of people around, but you would have thought if it's the Queen of England, there would be a crap load more people. Uh-huh. But also we're in Scotland, and Scotland kind of doesn't love the monarchy and like royal family. So nobody there really cares. Anyway, I kid you not, we're standing there, a whole motorcade pulls up, Prince Philip, Queen Elizabeth exit the car, walk right past us, wave at my mom, the Queen of England, and then proceeds into the building. This was her first day in Scotland. And I'm like, what? Like, no way. And she's like, we saw the queen. I'm like, nobody sees the queen. Like, it was bananas. That was number three.
Oh boy, you're good at this. You're a storyteller. But joking aside, those are good stories. Let's see. Amanda Shoemaker, John's wife, says she looked it up. You do look a bit like Jimmy's wife.
It's the coloring. I don't know. It's weird.
Let's see. All right. So number one, we've got Windy City Live, Shoot on the River. The host fell in and you had to step in and host that live segment. Number two, you got to play Jimmy's wife in a sketch. And then he played his wife.
In drag and, for the whole rest of the time.
And then Glasgow Olympics.
Glasgow. Commonwealth Games.
Commonwealth Games. Yeah. You were on the way there. Mom's first day. Basically became best friends with the Queen of England. Yeah. Let's see. All right. Emily says the second one, which is played the wife. Amanda says the second one. Ooh, what do you got, John? What do you think?
Yeah, I was thinking the second one. So I think one and two are suspect because they could be somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like those things are plausible, but they could have been somebody else either hosting studio or playing Jimmy's wife in the skit. I feel like that's the one because I don't know, because it just made me, no, because your position was like a, you were one of the first, but you were like a lower level, like assistant or whatever, right? So I guess they'll pull from whoever. I don't know. I just feel like maybe that would have been a really like big deal to be able to do that. So I'm going to go with number two.
All right. I'm creeping on your website and I want all of them to be true, but the clip you have on your website,
is it my personal one?
Yeah.
He's cheating.
There's like a head swap episode. And I feel like you would definitely post that. We've got the Commonwealth Games on here. So I'm going to also vote number two. That's what we got. John, what was your answer? I was looking this up and cheating.
Two.
All right. Everyone guess two.
Two is true.
Oh.
That head swap that I posted is where I'm playing his life.
Okay, I wasn't listening to it. I was just watching.
In the back half of that clip, you'll see I show up.
Yeah. I can pull it up too. So
the best part is at the end when they do like the head swap ending. That is my favorite part. You can pull it up if you want to.
Yeah. I'm going to pull it up on Vimeo here. I think I can do audio too. So let's see. Oh no. Okay. This is my first time using a computer, guys.
Impressive. You were a computer science major.
Yeah, I got through and this is the first time.
Ryan breaks all the computers.
All right. That's a new segment.
This is the very first head swap that they ever did. And it was like a reoccurring thing.
Can you guys hear it all?
No.
Okay.
But if you skip to like the halfway mark, that's where I show up. And the ending part is really cute. See, I'm hiding in the office there. He thinks that his wife is cheating on him with the graphics guy. That's what's happening. So he's trying to, is my wife in there? Yeah. So then he finds me in there with the graphics guy.
Also, it's funny that these are just pictures.
Yes, it was like 100 million photographs that they put together in this way. That's his best friend, that guy. He's also one of the head writers. Not an actual graphics guy. And my name is Lori in this. Oh, here I come. I'm hiding behind the door.
It's funny because I also still don't know what's going on.
The whole premise of this skit, which they use over and over and over again, is that Jimmy's trying to come up with a new segment called Head Swap, which is really dumb because you just take a celebrity's head and you put it on someone else's body. But like as he's trying to do the Head Swap segment, it always goes awry because some other side story happens. And this one, he finds out that his wife is cheating on him with the graphics guy. In other ones, they end up going into like a biker bar and almost get murdered. Like... So that's the head swap series.
That's awesome.
It was the truth.
It was true. All right. What's the other truth?
The Queen of England.
That really happened?
Yes, that really happened. I could not believe it. Like that was nuts. Like my mom, the first day she was there, like saw the Queen of England right there. Really dumb. I couldn't believe it. But the kayaking story was not true. I did do a kayaking segment. Oh. I was worried the entire time that he was going to tip over. Because I was like, what are they going to do? Are they going to make me do it? And he didn't tip over.
Nice. Yeah, you thought about it a lot. I was like, that seems legit. That seems like something that would happen. Yeah.
So there you have
it. That's awesome. Good. Well, that's it. That's what we got for today. We didn't even talk about you, that you're from Kenosha, and I'm kind of from there. So we'll have to have you back.
Sure.
To grill you more about that.
I want to be about Kenosha in the Five Timers Club and get better merch.
Yeah, exactly. Were you a Trojan? Is that?
No, I was in the county, Kenosha County. I went to Westosha Central.
I was a Falcon. All right. Yeah, because I went to Bradford. You could tell I'm pretty, I don't know.
City guy.
Diverse.
We took tractors to our high school. You were like a city guy.
Yeah, I love the idea that we're the city folk with the tiny town of Kenosha there.
Uh-huh.
Awesome. That's what we got for today. Amanda says she loves your background art.
Oh, cool.
Anything you want to plug? I do have a ski team, so check that out. I was trying to click around. Do you guys have work
so
that we can like look at? Because there's that kind of rotating reel. Background. Yeah, do you have a reel? Yes, that's what I meant to say.
Yes, there's a reel on the website too. That's a lot of the work that Ryan and I have produced and some of the stuff that Ski Team has produced too. But I mean, we just started in April, so we are working on
getting awesome.
Yeah, new stuff that is entirely Ski Team produced and created. So
there it is, more
to come on that, but please check it out. And if you want a seasoned, wizened professional to help you make some content,
Grandma Lynn and Grandpa Ryan are here for you.
Precisely.
Awesome. Anything else, John, that you got? And then I'll plug the podcast.
I know.
Perfect.
I think he's still dumbfounded from the two truths and a lie.
That was good. You fooled everyone. No one wins. You're the only one who gets a shirt.
Yeah, you really had us going.
All right. So this is also a podcast as well. You can check it out at letsbackflip.com/letsbackflipshow or just look up Let's Backflip Happy Hour, wherever podcasts are sold. We're on there. Right now we're going through the backlog. So we've got like 50 past episodes we got to get up. I'm going to try to get these current episodes up too, like a week late. So we'll have a back episode and a current episode. It'll be awesome. So check that out. You can just go to letsbackflip.com and click on blog as well. Thank you so much, Lynn, for coming and hanging out with us and sharing some libations.
Really fun. And happy Labor Day weekend.
Yes, likewise. And like I said, we'll have to get you back on soon. We'll get Emily on that so that we can talk all about the wonders of Kenosha and Kenosha County.
Indeed.
It'll be great. Awesome. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. That's what we got. We'll see you guys next time. Bye.